Organizational conflict of interest might not be a household phrase, but OCI can have a big effect on the relationships your agency has with contractors and on the work they can and cannot do for your program. Well, now the Federal Acquisition Regulation Council is about to write up some new OCI rules. Joining us to explain what's going on and what you need to do about it, Steve Ryan, an attorney who leads the Government Strategies Practice Group at McDermott, Will and Emery. Mr. Ryan, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Amy. It's great to be here.
Now, help me out a bit. The organization conflict of interest, can you please define that, what it is and how it's going to evolve?
Sure. OCI is really the concept that because of work you're doing for the government, you'd have a leg up on winning additional work for the government. So the classic OCI is a situation where a contractor helps define the requirements and then is on a team that seeks to meet those requirements. So that's sort of the core of the issue. It's any time that the government gives somebody an advantage so that their advice no longer looks impartial in the advice that they're giving.
And so this is already against the FAR and against the rules. So what is going to change now in this new rewrite of that rule that they're planning?
Well, Tom, it's very interesting. There are really two competing rules, which is a very unusual circumstance. At the end of last year, a rule went into effect that's in the DFAR that affects only large defense procurements, and now on April 26th, a FAR rule that would change the FAR itself has been proposed. So we have dueling rules, if you will. And the new FAR rule, which has not gone into effect yet, is a little broader and a little more meaty and meaningful than the DFAR rule. So let me chat a bit minute about that. The new proposal from the FAR Council would affect all of the procurement agencies, and it would move the organizational conflict of interest rule from where it currently sits in the FAR into a part that includes bribery, kickbacks, and mandatory disclosure. It would also change definitionally how you mitigate or get rid of the organizational conflict of interest, and it would define areas where it was very difficult to do so. So it's actually a very important proposed rule. It's one of the few that I would say this is going to actually change the nature of how people do business.
Is there a potential for conflict among those changes that you were just telling us about?
Well, I think they're intending to harmonize. In other words, when you make a change in the FAR and there is an existing DFAR rule, they'll probably go back and take a look at the DFAR rule subsequently. And in some ways, it gives people an opportunity to contrast how they view the rule. So I think they'll bring it into, I don't think it'll remain confusing. What's confusing right now, though, is where are we headed? And these have become real problems because with the consolidation, for example, of certain industries in the defense industry or in the viral industry where there's only a handful of producers, the concern is that somebody who really knows and can help the government form a procurement may be a very useful person in helping it another team win it. And so those are the kinds of concerns that people are dealing with.
And what is the reaction from contractors so far? Do we know what they think of this whole change?
Well, you know, contractors want to just go and win business. The people who are really going to be concerned about this are the people who do consulting and advisory assistance service contracting, CAS. That's a big word for, in essence, being on the government side of the procurement and then occasionally wandering over to the contractor side. And so how they work in the future and whether information that they're imparted in the course of their work for the government will be made public. That there are some interesting new restrictions on that. You know, this is a 19-page single space proposed rule and comment that's in the Federal Register for April 26. So we don't quite know yet how contractors are going to react to this and how trade associations, for example, will see the needs of their members with regard to that.
We're talking with Steve Ryan, the head of the Government Strategies Practice Group at McDermott, Will and Emery. And so does it, and I'm getting the impression from you that you are in favor of these rules being changed and updated, but the jury is still out as to what the impact is going to be.
I think that's right. OCI has always been the stepchild. It's always been something that could be waived. It's always been something that was an afterthought. And actually, given some of the problems, it's actually worthy of the kind of treatment that it's getting here. One thing I'm a little confused about, for example, though, even though I've dealt with this, frankly, for a lot of my professional life, they make a big distinction about when something would improperly influence the competitive process, and they say we have to be very careful never to do that, and I think that's good. And then they say, well, we can do that with regard to things that are strictly the government's business interest, and I've had trouble thinking about how I would define that on a call like this to lay personnel. What's the difference between the two? I mean, we clearly understand the procurement process, but what's just the government's business interests? And so there are still things that I think need to be worked out here, and the comments will help shape that. But it is very important that we not have a contracting process where it appears that people are on both sides of the contracting process, writing the requirements, evaluating the proposals, and somehow benefiting if they're on the other side. That's the core issue that has to be addressed, and I think some attention to that in the modern era is a good thing.
And so who does the burden of proof or prevention fall on? Would it be the contracting officers? Are they going to get a lot of work now?
Yeah, I would say, Tom, that you're right. The contracting officer will have more duties, more responsibilities, more clauses to insert and evaluate. And so, you know, for contracting personnel, I was trying to read this as if I was a contracting officer. It's, you know, a bit of a challenge to see the changes that are here and all of the different clauses that would be inserted into the different types of contracts. On the other hand, the rule is written in a way that it encourages us to think differently about where those changes will be. And they've done a pretty good job of saying, you add these to commercial contracts for IT, you add these to a major defense contract, you add these to, a services contract. So there is guidance to the contracting officer as well.
And let me ask a kind of tertiary question. This whole year, there's been talk about not having enough contracting officer technical representatives. Is there a role that the COTARs could play in helping the contract officer sort out who's doing what and where the conflict might end and begin?
Well, the COTARs would be intimately familiar with the contractor who's providing the technical advice. But really, I didn't see the word COTAR in the 19 pages of single space. But, COTARs and contracting officers should be working as a team, and the knowledge of one should be readily available to the other. So I'm hoping that as contracting officers struggle with this, when it becomes final, they'll have additional guidance from people.
And who do you think really wanted this? Was it the contracting officer professional community? Was it the contractors, or was it administration politicals, or a combination of those three?
You know, I think Congress grew increasingly nervous.
Oh, yeah, them too.
About what they saw here, Tom. Congress got the impression from looking down from afar that agencies like NASA, where contractors are supervising contractors, or, you know, other programs, you know, that you needed additional guidance here. I mean, it wasn't as if there was a scandal, but it was just a general unease. And if you looked at the Court of Federal Claims and the cases that were coming there, you know, a lot of it was a little bit yicky. It was at the edge and in terms of behavior. And, of course, that's because the competitive process tosses up those situations. And so I think that was the defining reason for this.
Steve Ryan leads the Government Strategies Practice Group at McDermott, Will & Emery. Thanks very much for clarifying this complicated issue.
Thanks, Tom and Amy. Great to be with you.